ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Bhagavad Gita as it is, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, founder Acharya of ISKCON, text 44 of chapter 2. Bhogaishvarya prasattanam taya pahita charitasam Vyavasayatmaka, Vyavasayatmika, Buddhi, Samadho, Navidhiyate. Translation. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Purport by Srila Prabhupada. Samadhi means fixed mind. The Vedic dictionary, the Nirukti, says, Samyag adhiyate smin Atma tattva yathatmyam. When the mind is fixed for understanding the self, it is said to be in samadhi. Samadhi is never possible for persons interested in material sense enjoyments and bewildered by such temporary things. They are more or less condemned by the process of material energy. Bhogaishvarya prasattanam taya prasitta chetasam virasayatmaka buddhi samadho navidhiyate. In the minds of those who are too attached to sense enjoyment and material opulence and who are bewildered by such things, the resolute determination for devotional service to the Supreme Lord does not take place. Om Jnana Tinirandhasya Jnananjana Shalakaya Chakshurin Militam Yena Tasmai Shri Bhagavad Nama Vandeyam Shri Guru Shri Atat Parikabhava Shri Guru Navaishnavam Sta Shri Rupam Sagujatam Sagunavakuratam Mitam Tam Sajivam Sādvaitam, Sāvadhūtam, Parajanasattam, Krishna Kītam, Kalīvam, Shri Rādhā, Krishna Pādhām, Sahagana Lalitā, Shubhashakām, Vītām, Vistā. Hare Krishna, Hare Krishna, Krishna Krishna, Hare Hare, Hare Rāma, Hare Rāma, Rāma Rāma, Hare Hare.
What's the usual time to finish the class on Sunday? This time? 6 o'clock, all right. I just thought this verse was particularly applicable to Southern California, where Bhog Aishwarya Prasakti, or attachment to sense enjoyment and material opulence, is quite prominent. So I thought I might speak about that. But then I thought, going back over the years I'd spent traveling here and there,
trying to serve Srila Prabhupada's mission, I thought of many years I'd spent in Bangladesh also, which is from the social, cultural, and definitely economic perspective, just about as opposite to Southern California as anyone could imagine. But the same principle is true then, that even though people do not have anything like the opportunities for sense enjoyment or economic development as do people in this area. Of course, people in this area are always thinking that I'm really struggling to get it. And most people are struggling, even though there is so much opulence compared to most parts of the world. But most people feel they're just struggling to keep up with their payments, isn't it? And it's life's really tough, and getting enough pennies together to pay the bills. But at least, yeah, right? Not everyone's a millionaire. So, but at least for someone coming from a poorer part of the world, the first impression is dazzling. Big highways, cars, opulent buildings. And then we have poorer countries where the most common mode of transport still today is natural and holistic, not or out of necessity, not out of choice. That is, two legs given by God. And if you want to take something to sell in the market, put it on your head and walk 10 miles, 15 miles. Sell all your things, make some purchases, and walk back. So we may think that, well, in that situation, how can this bhogaishvarya prasaktana, how can this principle apply? Because where's the enjoyment? There is enjoyment. Everywhere in this material world, there is material enjoyment. In some places, it's intense, and in other places, due to less money, less aishvarya, or also due to cultural factors, there's less opportunity for indulgence in gross sense gratification. But the same principle is there. Everyone, and not only human beings, but in every species of life, everyone is thinking, how can I enjoy myself? Self being defined as this body and this mind. So as long as we are thinking how we can enjoy the body and the mind, even if that enjoyment seems minuscule to others, it is still the principle that of enjoyment of this material world, that separates us from Krishna or makes our determination to serve Krishna slack. Now we may think that in America there's more opportunity for sense enjoyment, but then on the heavenly planets the opportunities for sense enjoyment are thousands and thousands of times more than here. And the obstacles to sense enjoyment are not so much. There's no taxes to pay. There's no credit cards that you have to pay. There's no speeding fines. There's no traffic jams. There's booze, but you don't get a sinful reaction. You don't even get a headache afterwards. Let's go! Wait a minute. What does Krishna say in Bhagavad Gita? Dukhalayam shashvatam. This whole material world is miserable. Now, how can the heavenly planets be miserable? If there's parties all the time, and very handsome, healthy young men and women, even they may be very old, but they don't grow old. And there's, you know, parties with somaras, kind of wine, which doesn't give a hangover, and very healthy young men, and like young means they don't grow old. There's no growing older. Yeah, there's no senility. And disease also is practically not there. Then how is it that even there, that's considered a place of unhappiness? Why is that? Well, the same question might be asked by people in Bangladesh or India or so many other countries where you go to the American embassy and you see big long lines at the consular section. People queuing up to get American visas and being told no, 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 mostly no. So in these countries, if you tell people that, well, actually in America people are also miserable, mostly people don't believe you. So, well, they have money. And you see on the TV, they have nice clothes. They make the clothes in Bangladesh and sell them in America. And there's plenty of money and big cars and big houses. And people must be happy, because that's all we need to be happy. But then when you come here and say the same thing, that, hey, look, all you people, you've got big cars and big roads and big houses, and still you're all miserable. People say, yeah, yeah, that's true. We also have so much anxiety and depression and schizophrenia and Prozac and all the symptoms of a unhappy society. People agree, yes, no one's happy. So it's the same thing. We think, well, in the heavenly planets, everyone should be happy because there's all the facilities for saints' enjoyment, but none of the obstacles. They don't have to go to work. Just enjoy, that's all. So why is it that even in the heavenly planets, even there where there's so much facility for saints' enjoyment, that no one is happy? Well, the mool, or the basic, intrinsic reason, is that we are spiritual beings, and we cannot be happy in an atmosphere that is not meant for us. If we think that we should be happy in the heavenly planets, or we could be happy even here now, if I won the lottery and got $1 million, that might be, well, you could buy a small house somewhere. And no, cutting by a small house for $1 million. Okay, you win $10 million on the lottery. That's enough, is it? That's enough to live happily forever after? No? That won't pay your hospital bills? Alright, you win $100 million. Bill Gates suddenly decides he likes you and sends you $100 million check. Do what you like with it. Have a good day. Okay, $100 million. That would be enough to live. Okay? $10 million's not enough. Maybe. But you'd still be in a... So $100 million. Okay, let's say $1 billion. Wait, okay, all of a sudden, we're giving you $1 billion. Now, don't take me to court and sue me. This is only an analogy. I'm not going to give you $1 billion. Don't say I promised. I don't have it anyway. So, you get $1 billion, then you don't have to go to work. Die! And even if you're 80 years old, all the young girls will be interested in you. Because they know, well, maybe he'll write me in his will. And you can buy a big house somewhere. $1 billion is enough, right? And you can put in everything you want in a home. What are the things you need in your home to make you happy? TV, that goes without saying. What else? Air conditioner, that also goes without saying. What kind of thing would you buy that you couldn't buy nowadays if you had $1 billion? What do you need to be happy?
Pool.
What?
Pool.
A pool, a swimming pool. Okay. All right. Olympic size, right? At least. Okay, big pool. Then you can invite your friends. And you get lots of friends. When you have $1 billion, all of a sudden you'll find people like you so much. And they never discovered what a great person you were until you had $1 billion. So I have so many friends. Oh, and you know what? You can get in the newspaper also. In the glitterati section. All the, what do they call that? The celebrity section. You can be there holding a glass of wine, standing next to another completely hollow person who's got lots of money. First of all, you have to go and get your teeth done. So they're suitable to be in the celebrity section. Get all the gums, get them all polished up, and get your face lifted up. Okay, $1 billion. Then you can live happily. But the billionaires also aren't happy. They look happy because they have to smile in the celebrities section of the newspaper. But they're also not happy. Why not? Why? We can say that no one can be happy in this material world. Why? Because what we consider to be happiness is not happiness. We consider happiness to be the contact of the senses with their objects. Touch, taste, smell, sight. What else did I leave out? Smell. We think hearing, yeah, I think it's anyway. This should make us happy. So hearing. Get an iPod or a dozen or so of them. Put all the songs you want. And that should make you happy. All the different songs you could think of. So take a few weeks loading them, choosing them all, loading them in, and then you can start to listen to them all. But it doesn't actually make us happy. It gives a feeling, maybe some little euphoria or something like that. Or we can eat all different kinds of food. One of the glories of America in the big cities like LA or New York, if you have the money, you can go one night to a Mexican restaurant, one night to a Chinese restaurant, and the next night to a Korean restaurant, and the next night to a Spanish restaurant, and the next night to a Russian restaurant, and then the next night to the doctor probably, to get some pills for digestion. But you can go to a good doctor, a very good doctor. Not an ordinary doctor. And if the doctor doesn't cure you, you can go to an acupuncturist, and then you can go to a homeopath, and then you can go to all different things. You can go to a naturopath. You have a wonderful choice of persons who will promise to cure you by various methods. So the interaction of the senses with their objects, we presume, should make us happy. But actually, even if you have these things, you have TV, iPod, well, everyone's got an iPod. Everyone's got a TV too. Even the best TV. So, whatever we have, there's one thing that's even more relishable than the direct enjoyment of the senses, which is why people, even billionaires, one major reason that billionaires are anxious to get more money. You're saying, well, why don't they just retire and relax and enjoy themselves? Because there is always the desire to show oneself better than others and more accomplished than others. So the billionaire wants to be the multi-billionaire. He doesn't, like, there's a list of all the rich people in the world. What's that called? Anyone know? What's it called? Who's who? Forbes? Forbes. Is it? Forbes. Okay. Probably quite a few of those live in Southern California. Is it? More than in Bangladesh. Probably. So, they're not content. No one's content until they're there. Numero uno. And numero uno is looking back and saying, hey, I'm only $27 billion ahead of my nearest competitor. I have to keep on working. Prestige. The prestige. Why do people want to be in the celebrities column? Photographed. People like to be photographed with the great film actress of today. Because famous. The fame. The glory of being so great. There's a desire to show ourselves as being very great and respected by others. But that also, that doesn't give happiness to the soul. Neither here nor in the heavenly planets, where the enjoyment of enjoying the senses, that doesn't satisfy. And even the king of heaven, Indra, he's in that position and he has some sense of enjoyment that people are honoring me, worshipping me, whenever they see me. They, oh, you see, that's Indra. And he turns around and looks and says, ha ha, just see, they're all looking at me. But he's also afraid. He looks down and he sees some yogi is performing severe austerities. And he thinks, this yogi is going to take over my position by his yogic power. And then I'll have to just be an ordinary demigod again. And he's in anxiety. Now, the same principle applies everywhere. Many times I saw it in Bangladesh. Nowadays, in Dhaka, the capital city, there's traffic jams, like everywhere in the world. But when I was there about almost 30 years ago, it was mostly rickshaw jams, cycle rickshaw jams. But now they have genuine car traffic jams. They've become more advanced. So we'd see people, the richer people would have a car. And they'd hire a driver, because if you can afford a car, you can afford to hire a driver to drive it. And they'd be driving in their car, but almost everyone had second-hand reconditioned Japanese cars. That means that the Japanese, when they've driven their car for 1 or 2 years, and then they think, this is not up to my prestige level to have a 2-year-old car, so they buy a new one. And the old ones get refurbished and get sold to Bangladesh. And here's someone sitting in his car looking extremely proud, because he's driving a second-hand Japanese car. And everyone else has to either walk or go in a rickshaw. And he's so proud. You can see just looking like this. Whereas anywhere else in most places in the world, to be driving in a second-hand Japanese car, that would be considered, that's like, that's something to be looked down on. Recently I was in Slovenia, which is a tiny little country, which was formerly part of Yugoslavia. And one devotee was telling me, we were driving in his car, so I jokingly remarked, this looks like a Rio ISKCON car. That means that, for instance, you have to get out of the door, someone else has to get out the other side and open it from the outside, because it doesn't open from the inside. And things like that. You know, there's always, when you're driving, there's a tut, tut, tut. tut ways, because something, you can't work out what it is, but something underneath the chassis is banging against it, and you're hoping the police don't look at your tires and things like that. So he was telling that, actually, I had a good car before, but then I was doing business and this and that, but then I joined the temple and gave my car to the temple, and they just gave me this one to drive. And when my father saw me, he was so disappointed. He said, oh, before you had a good car, now I feel ashamed to call you my son, because you know, I have a good car, and you're my son, you should also have a good car. Now you're driving this broken down thing. Quick, go, get out of here, I don't want the neighbors to see you. So their whole perspective on happiness is based on show. I should show I'm in a high position, I have plenty of money to enjoy, I am number one on the list. So bhoga means, here it's bhoga aishwarya. Bhog means sense enjoyment, and aishwarya means opulence, but not just opulence, but the chance to show it off to others, to maintain one's prestige. But however prestigious one may be, no one is satisfied. And everyone is in anxiety. And those who have more prestige, more things to show off, they're actually in more anxiety, because they're always afraid of losing their position. So it's a paradox of material life that we think that we should get more material possessions so that we can enjoy ourselves. But the more material possessions we get, the less we're happy, because we're in anxiety that we'll lose it, and we're unhappy because we've got the things which we think will make us happy, and it doesn't make us happy, so we're frustrated. Whereas the people who don't have the things to enjoy, they're still living in hope of being happy, so they're more happy, because they're thinking, well, maybe in future I'll get all these things and then I'll be happy. Whereas the people already got it, they've got it, and it doesn't make them happy, so they're hopeless. But still they're trying, because they don't know anything else. And they think, well, it should be happy, it should make me happy. In the advertisements it makes people happy. So in the advertisements people drink Pepsi and then they jump around. And so it didn't work for me. Well, something wrong with me. I'd better take a Prozac along with my Pepsi. And then drink another Pepsi, and it's pathetic. The whole thing is pathetic. You can book some time on TV. How much is that? Whoops, there's $1 million gone. Show an advertisement. Bhogaishwarya prasaktanam taya parita chetasam vyavasayatmaka buddhi samadho navidhiyate. Just tell people that, my dear friends, my dear brothers and sisters, this attempt to be happy by sense enjoyment and material happiness is doomed from the very beginning. You cannot be happy, it's not possible. Happiness is of a completely different nature to that which you presume it to be. What is happiness? Happiness means simply to accept that I am the servant of Krishna, and to accept that I'm only meant for loving Krishna. Instead of being attached to money, houses, cars, horses, prestige, dogs, cats, iPods, and so many, unlimited list of things which we think should make us happy, but doesn't, we should simply be attached to Krishna. Because Krishna is the actual focus, the natural focus of everyone's affection and attachment. And this is what Krishna is explaining, that these bodies are temporary. So everything that we acquire in relation to these bodies, my house, my home, my bank balance, even my debts, it actually has no intrinsic relationship with me. I am not this body, and everything in relationship to this body is external to it. I am spirit soul. My eternal, natural relationship is with Krishna. Krishna is the reservoir of all pleasure. That pleasure which is in relationship to Krishna is not the very poor pleasure of simply seeing, tasting, touching, smelling, and hearing various sensual stimuli which we consider should make us happy. But the happiness that comes from being with Krishna is from the exchange of pure love. Instead of thinking how I can enjoy hearing, touching, tasting, smelling, feeling, we think, here is a very nice flower, or here's some very nice food. Let me offer it to Krishna with love. Krishna will be satisfied. Satisfaction comes from trying to satisfy Krishna. And Krishna can be easily satisfied. It is not at all difficult to satisfy Krishna if our heart's desire is pure. If we simply desire to satisfy Krishna, then Krishna, very kindly, He has appeared here in this capital city of sense enjoyment, where people are very much deluded by the prospect of bhogaishvarya, enjoyment through sensual contact and through opulence. Krishna has come, and Dwarkadhish, He is the Lord of unlimited opulence. That opulence is completely spiritual. That means it is not contaminated by the mundane qualities, the exploitive spirit, the mundane built-in obstacle. Everything mundane that we try to enjoy, built-in is distress. Along with material happiness comes material distress. But Krishna, the Lord of all opulence, the Lord of all happiness, the Lord of all love, He offers everyone a love and an enjoyment in which there is not even the slightest trace of any distress. So, the real and natural object of everyone's attachment is Krishna. If we can just understand this point, that we are meant for loving Krishna. It's not something that can be forced. Thou shalt love God, or thou shalt crisp in hell forever. And that's not love. Love is not something to be forced. But attraction to Krishna is is the soul's natural propensity. Just like it is natural that water flows downhill in a mountain stream, so it is natural that the rivers flow towards the sea. So it is natural for the soul to love Krishna. And Krishna appears and He says, Patram, Pushpam, Palam, Toyam, Yome Bhakti Aprayachati, Tadaham, Bhakti Paharitam, Ashnami Prayatatmana. Please, Krishna said, you just offer me nothing very great. Leaf, flower, fruit, whatever. But offer it with love. And what is that love? Not coming to Krishna, I'm giving you a leaf, please give me $1 billion so I can enjoy myself. But Krishna, please, you accept, I am not worthy to offer this to you, but I'm simply requesting that you are very great, you're very kind, I'm not worthy, but please, you accept this little offering of love. And in that sincere spirit, Krishna will accept it. And when Krishna accepts our offering, then automatically our hearts will be surcharged with the blessings, the mercy of Krishna. So just this little point is to be understood. That there is nothing in this world, even up to the standard of opulence of the heavenly planets, there's nothing in this world that can even slightly compare with the benediction of Krishna Bhakti, or love of Krishna. That everyone who has come to bow their heads this afternoon at the lotus feet of Sri Sri Gaunitai, Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish, Jagannath Subhadra Baladevi, they are millions of times more fortunate than anyone else in Southern California or anywhere else in America or anywhere else in the world, including the heavenly planets. Whatever planet, you could be at the beach trying to find a spot among the other thousands of people enjoying on this beach there. You could be surfing, you could be driving your Harley, if you have one, down the freeway in the nice sun. And so, or you could be having a quiet afternoon at home with the dog barking or something like that. You could be taking your dog for a walk. There are so many things you could be doing, but you have chosen to come here and bow your head at the lotus feet of Sri Rukmini Dwarkadish, because you have enough intelligence to understand that human life is not meant for sense enjoyment, is not meant for simply mindlessly amassing money and showing oneself off to other foolish people, that now I have more money than you, I'm in the celebrities column, or at least I'm daydreaming that one day I might be in the celebrities column. Or now I'm 80 years old and I don't think I'll get it in this lifetime, but I really wish I was, and so I can daydream that in the past I was in, or something like this. But devotees, they understand that the real celebrity is Krishna, and all other so-called celebrities, they're not even slight comparison to Krishna. The most beautiful film star in all of Hollywood has only got a tiny, 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 tiny percentage of the beauty of Krishna. And that's also a perverted reflection. The real beauty is that of Krishna. So those who come here, they can understand this, and we should understand this, and not be diverted by the swirling maya or illusion that is so strong. Maya is calling, come and enjoy. But devotees, they don't listen. They listen to Krishna, who tells us, Bhogaishvarya Prasaktanam Tayaparita Chaitasam, that one's consciousness cannot be fixed on reality, on Krishna, as long as we're trying to enjoy anything in this material world. So devotees very carefully keep their consciousness fixed on Krishna by regularly, daily, chanting His holy names, studying Bhagavad Gita as it is, coming for darshan of Rukmini Dwarkadish, and praying to them that, my dear Krishna, you please help me. I'm very tiny. You please protect me from this maya which is trying to pull me away from you. So in this way, devotees, they remain fixed on the path of devotion by regularly hearing and chanting about Krishna and associating with His devotees. and relishing the beauty of Rukmini Dwarka Dish. They are not digressed away from the goal of life, which is to go to Krishna, not to go to the heavenly planets, not to go anywhere, but to Krishna in the spiritual world, where there is no birth, no death, no anxiety, no showing oneself off pretending to be a celebrity, no false smiles pretending to be happy, when in fact they're completely stressed out and depressed internally. But devotees in the spiritual world serving Krishna eternally in a relationship of unlimited transcendental bliss have no attraction to this very tiny, petty, mediocre so-called enjoyment of this material world. So let us understand this very clearly. Krishna says it in Bhagavad Gita, and we can practically experience it all around us in our own lives. As much as we try to enjoy this material world, that much we feel frustrated. And we can see that in the lives of everyone, that however much people try to enjoy, it simply ends in frustration and death. And after death, well, what happens? That depends on what we do in this life. If this life is dedicated to sense enjoyment and material opulence, then we're likely to take birth in a fallen position. Or even if we take birth again in any so-called good position, we take birth in the heavenly planets, there's no happiness there. So devotees simply pray to be engaged in the service of the service of the service of the devotees of Krishna, so that they can get free from this material attachment which obstructs the natural flow of love towards Krishna, which is the only meaningful goal of life. Devotees are intelligent enough to understand this, and therefore they dedicate their lives fully in the service of Krishna without being diverted to the temporary and illusory goals of sense enjoyment and material opulence. I was told this class should finish around 6. My watch says 6, so I'll finish here. And all glories to Sri Sri Rukmini Dwarkadhish. All glories to Srila Prabhupada. Is there any question, please? Or comment? Any protagonist of the school of sense enjoyment and material opulence has any protest? Yes.
I have a question. I don't consider myself attached, but on the other hand, I found that someone has stolen from me methodically for the last 6 years. And I feel very hurt, not because I'm attached to the material aspect, but the trust.
Yeah.
How can I let that go?
Yeah, I'll repeat the question. Your name, please?
Josh.
Indian?
No, J-O-S-H.
Oh. Josh is an Indian name.
Joshua.
So Joshua here has recently discovered. Recently means it'll go away after some time. The pain will go away.
Okay.
I know, I've had the same thing. Part of life in the material world. Josh here has discovered that someone he trusted has been systematically siphoning off funds from him, stealing from him for the last 6 years. And although he doesn't consider himself so much materially attached to the money, he feels very hurt that the trust has been so badly,
betrayed.
The trust has been so badly betrayed. He feels very hurt. So what's the question? Is that material attachment? How do you let it go? Well, you might not have any choice. You could take them to court. You're talking about it from a psychological, philosophical point of view. Well, everything should be considered philosophically. One way to look at it is that someone might think that, well, I must have done something to him or her in the previous life, and now they're getting it back on me.
Yes.
So that's one way of considering it. Another way I'll tell you, our Prabhupada in his life before he was a sannyasi, in his household life, he was running a business, and he went out on protracted business tour and left his factory in the care of his servants, or you know, his employees. Really groping for words here. And then at some point he got a telegram saying that one of his employees had cheated him and sold the whole factory, and he was left with nothing except the debts. And when he got this telegram, he laughed. And he recited a verse from Srimad Bhagavatam. Yasyaham anugrihnami harishye taddhanam shanai. What's the next line? Tad adanam tyajantyasya swajana dukha dukita. He quoted the line that Krishna says that to one who I am very merciful, I take away their wealth. And seeing them penniless, his relatives then reject him. And then he has no other shelter but me. So Prabhupada saw this philosophically. This is Krishna's mercy on me. And later, when he left his family and was living, without formally taking sannyas, he was living as a renunciate in Vrindavan. And he wrote a poem in which he wrote that, I have my family, friends, and children, but I have no money, and therefore they don't care for me. Now I am seeing the stark face of material nature, and sitting here in Vrindavan, I laugh. He's thinking, this is Krishna's mercy on me, that I'm seeing how cruel is material nature. Krishna is so kind, he's showing that even those we consider that we love, in so many cases that love is just a pretext to cheat us. So then, what else is there to do but dedicate ourselves to Krishna? That requires quite a high level of detachment. But that detachment, which might otherwise come after many lifetimes, we can get quickly by such a cruel method. We can realize that we have no other shelter than Krishna. That is the nature of material life. Another thing is that, anyway, we don't have anything, actually. Bill Gates, how many billions of dollars is he supposed to have? 51 billion, 52. Last time you read it was 51. Now it's 52. Tomorrow it's 53. Goes like that. Maybe it goes down too sometimes. So he has $51 billion. He doesn't have a dime because he can't bring a penny with him. It's all imaginary. It doesn't actually belong to him. Now, if someone was to siphon off a billion or so from his account somehow or other, the law would get into action and they would attempt to restore that money. But it doesn't really belong to him. The pauper who has a penny in his pocket is poor, and Bill Gates is poor. And as the pauper is rich with a penny, and Bill Gates is rich with $51 billion, but because no one actually has anything. Nothing belongs to us. Everything belongs to Krishna. So, it's a cruel lesson, but that's the nature of the material world. Now, who are you going to place your trust in? Yeah. Well, let's be realistic here. Don't think that as soon as you step in the door of the Hare Krishna community that everyone's a perfect saint. That should also be considered. That everyone coming here, everyone's from different backgrounds. So even in spiritual life, we have to be careful in who we put our trust in. That's also a fact. But the intrinsic fact of reality is that love is a genuine principle. That if one person cheats us, two people cheat us, 10 people cheat us, 100 people cheat us, still there are those who will not cheat us. Even if we give our love to one, to another, and they cheat us, still Krishna loves us. He has nothing to gain from us. He has no material motive to exploit us. And there are devotees of Krishna who are genuinely interested in interacting with others simply for the sake of sharing Krishna consciousness with others. So we should seek out the association of honest devotees. Honest not just fiscally honest, but honest in all respects. That they make friendship with others. Not friendship in this material world is made for exploiting, either grossly or subtly. But there are many devotees who live their lives simply to themselves cultivate Krishna consciousness and encourage others to do so. So we should try to seek out that association. If, as a result of this heart-rending experience, you can find out the association of genuine devotees, that will be the greatest gain that you could ever get in millions of lifetimes, and you may end up thanking that person who cheated you for giving you an impetus to seek out the real friendship and the real love of genuine devotees. I'm so glad I had such a rotten childhood and youth. And it wasn't so bad compared to many others, but I felt it was really horrible. I felt it was really suffering. But if it hadn't been for that, then I probably wouldn't have come to this line. So that's Krishna's mercy on me. Yes, please.
Next question. Do you believe that what bad things you do now, you get the...
What bad things you do now, you get a reaction in the future? Now, you've asked me, do I believe?
Yes.
So I'd just like to make a little statement here, that whether I believe it or not doesn't make the slightest bit of difference. Because if it's true, it's true. If it's not true, it's not true. And it doesn't depend upon my belief.
No, I don't think about
but,
the purpose of
yeah, according to Bhagavad Gita, and according to the Vedic literature, which we can accept as correct, that certainly there is a reaction to everything we do, either good or bad. And reactions may come in this life or in future lives, but they will certainly come. So the best thing is to do everything for the pleasure of Krishna. Then there's no material reaction. There's only spiritual reaction, which means that we get blessed with the love of Krishna. That's much better. Now, how to do that? That's very practical. Just like you're cooking at home? Presumably. What do you cook? Roti, dal, all these things. It's roti, dal, sabji, all these different things. So, pretty much every Indian housewife does that. But those who offer it to Krishna and give their family prasad, then they give their family the blessings of Krishna. And those who don't, they might give very tasty food, but there's a reaction. Karmic reaction, even for taking food, even vegetarian food. So offer everything to Krishna. Krishna eyes our lives. Are you practicing Krishna consciousness? Do you chant Hare Krishna mantra? You're doing that. You're offering your food to Krishna.
Yeah.
Why don't you start? That would be very nice. I have a little book here, actually. All right. Well, please, yeah, mostly some little milk and mishri, something like that, or banana. But actually, everything we should offer to Krishna. I have written a little book, actually, which gives practical direction on how to make our lives Krishna conscious. I hope there's still some copies there. There are two or three copies. It's called A Big... Okay, I'm supposed to finish this class here. Yeah. So, I'd just like to announce... Can you give me that Bhagavad Gita? Who doesn't have this book in their home? All right, everyone got it. You don't have? All right. If you have anything left after being cheated, you give a little donation for printing this. It's a bit of a hefty book. Please take it and read it. Oh yeah, please, not on the... Yeah, if you just keep it up, because it's sacred. Okay, this is one of the books I've written. It's called A Beginner's Guide to Krishna Consciousness, and it gives all practical directions how to spiritualize our home. Now, after going to the shops, buying the atta, buying the rice and the sabji, and cutting it up and cooking it, you don't do all that trouble, you just take another few minutes to offer it to Krishna with love, then your whole home will become Krishnaized. So here's directions on how to chant with the mala, how to put tilak, all these things. There's one book, A Beginner's Guide to Krishna Consciousness. So I've written a few books like this about Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, about Prabhupada. So these books are available here. If anyone would like to take, please do so. And give a little donation to help with the printing. Hare Krishna. And now it's time for prasadam. Don't need to announce that.